This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 18th of May, 2022. Markets trying to get back into a bullish mood yesterday in the U.S. We saw a pretty decent extension in the rally yesterday. So this is like the second little extension off the lows we've seen here, and this despite the Fed coming out pretty hawkish. A couple of speakers, one Kashkari saying it's an open question whether the Fed is going to have to keep tightening until it gets a recession. I'll answer them on that one. Yes. And then Fed Chair Powell out saying that the Fed won't hesitate to hike beyond neutral if that's necessary, even if it causes some pain and sees the unemployment rate rising. The anticipated end of year Fed rate rising from where it was the prior day, about 10 basis points. We're still less than 10 basis points, but some few basis points below where we were ahead of that May 4th FOMC meeting, when the Fed sort of oddly surprised by wanting to take off the 0.75% rate hikes, taking those off the table. So we're back towards those highs with this fresh hawkish commentary, but not yet at the highs. So yeah, and with risk sentiment, we see the dollar a shade weaker, et cetera. But I think a lot of what is going on in this market is spelled out pretty clearly in your equity theme baskets, Peter, that I'm looking at here on slide 2. Look at the top performer, crypto and blockchain. I find that ironic when you have Bitcoin still struggling for any impulsivity around that 30,000 level, which is still in play. We're just below that level right now as I'm speaking. But what's your take? And we'll get into it later, but some pretty interesting news and forecasts in the retail space yesterday.
Yeah, the takeaway from the theme baskets is that every single day we come in and everything is constantly reversed. So the mean reversion that is going on among these themes is pretty substantial. So we have a mean reversion environment, because the other day crypto was down the most and now this basket is up the most. So that is sort of the one signal you can take out of this. The other signal goes back to Vice Premier Li He from China. His vow yesterday in a big speech to support platform companies. He did talk about competition, something that the Chinese government had talked a lot about. They are not in favor of big technology companies, if you hadn't read the news over the past couple of years. So basically, as we have argued before, you know, up and coming, or even right now, big consumer companies that are not using data to their competitive advantage are safe. That's why we have our China consumer and technology basket, so you can find the consumer names in there. And then we have created the China's little giants, which, by the way, is up the most months to date, together with semiconductors. And China's little giants are not big companies. They have important technology, at least declared by the Chinese government. So they get this special label that gives them certain benefits. So you can check out that basket if you want exposure. And you know, there are more news as well out of Shanghai that there is no more community spreading. I think we need to be a little bit cautious before we go all exciting. And then, as you correctly said, John, two pieces of big earnings report coming out yesterday from the U.S. retail industry. So Walmart, disappointing. They have both on margins and earnings. Their outlook was not as strong as expected. They had their worst one-day sell-off since 1987, if I remember it correctly. Basically not a very rosy report. And as I highlighted internally in the team at the desk, if you look at their revenue growth over the past year, up 8.5%. Inflation rate in the US is up 8.4% over the same period. So basically the entire revenue growth at Walmart is just a monetary or price level phenomenon and not a volume phenomenon. And then Home Depot was what's much more strong, both on Q1, where they surprised to the upside, and then the outlook for Q2 was very strong, and they said they're not seeing any signs that the U.S. consumer is cutting back. And the CEO said on the conference call that the tight housing supply in the U.S. will continue for the next 5 years. So overall, a very strong picture there from Home Depot.
I'll push back very strongly on the 5 years comment from Home Depot's CEO. I'm sure he's making a lot more money than I am and has a lot more insight into these things than I do. But I've got a key housing chart actually up later. And there was one interesting, no idea what the interpretation is on it, but it just looked interesting to me. And you could do some readings on it that I would say are less positive. That is that their transaction count was down 8.2% year on year, they said, for the quarter. But the ticket size is what saved them, up at 11.1% per transaction. So Maybe it's the lower end that's staying away a little bit more, and the bigger spenders are still happy to spend, feeling flush with their home price gains, new housing they've bought and we need to furnish, et cetera. Just an interesting data point. But your focus in a piece you put out yesterday is very interesting, and we've really talked a lot about this, and it's such an important topic for long-term viability of the real growth in our economy. That is the energy base of the economy and how little we're investing in it. And that's reflected in the market cap we see in energy stocks. So take us through what we're talking about on slide 3 and the piece you put out yesterday.
Yeah, we had a piece before this one. So the reason why we put this out is that not all listeners on our podcast follow Saxo's research regularly. So this is just my opportunity to recycle what are some of the things we're doing. And we started the week by showing how frothy the most freshest parts of the U.S. equity market, how frothy they still are, these stocks. And the point being that everyone is talking about buying the dip in technology, but then we followed up with this note that we wrote yesterday looking at the global energy sector, and we have the highest free cash flow yield in 27 years. You have it right there on slide 3. And we have showed this capital expenditures chart many times on this podcast and also in our research notes, that we have the lowest investment levels in nominal and real terms in more than 2 decades. And we need energy more than ever, oil and gas, and we'll need it more. We'll need it for longer than we expected, and we need to fill in the hole from following the Russian sanctions. And then I have a 5-year chart, because I think we're getting to an inflection point where over a 5-year horizon, the global energy stocks have actually performed better than the overall market. And not to be too, you know, patting ourselves on the shoulders too much, but on the 24th of January, we put out our Q1 outlook, which was called Fueling the Energy Crisis. And back then we said that there was not a part of the equity market that had a higher expected return than the global energy sector. 5% dividend yield forward, 5% long-term dividend growth, so around 10%. And that's so excluding any projections of multiple expansions, just 10%. So it could be higher. And we said that was probably the best risk-reward ratio you could get in the market right now. And since that date, the global energy stocks are up 25%. The global equity market MSCI World is down 10% in the same period. So that's 35% outperformance right there in just 3 months.
What about, let's go over to you, Ole, because if we look at oil prices, they're still very elevated. We did have a little bit of an ugly stumble yesterday. But when I look at the forward curve, it suggests that oil prices are very elevated relative to the forward, to the back month. So you have the June WTI, for example, trading, or let's call it July, because that's the one that's got the highest volume, at $110 a barrel. And I look forward to December, it's at $97 a barrel, just massive roll yields here. What is that curve saying to you? And do you believe that prices are set to fall at that sort of pace?
Well, I think we just need to look at the inventory levels of fuel products in the US right now, and we'll understand why the market is just very, very tight. It's leaving quite a high competition for crude oil for spot delivery. It also the reason why we've seen the spread recently between WTI and Brent collapse back to close to parity. Obviously, if you just compare June with July, then WTI is actually trading above. But as you said, if you look at the two July contracts, it's still below, but it has narrowed quite a bit. And it is a very tight US market right now. The retail sales yesterday is also shown in the other strong retail sales, also seen in the demand for fuel, which has not been impacted by record high prices in the US. And that's basically just driving this very, very strong demand from refineries right now. And that leads us to to today's EIA weekly stock report. And as you can see on slide 5, we are the API last night came with if those numbers are confirmed today, then we will see a market continue to be supported. A 2.4 million barrel drop in crude stocks, whereas the EIA is looking for a 2 million barrel increase and a 5 million barrel drop in gasoline stocks. We are at some pretty serious low levels for this time of year. You said that there was just a temporary blip on the downside yesterday. That came after news that the US was contemplating easing some of the economic sanctions against Venezuela. I put a small insert here. Venezuela is currently producing 1.7 million barrels a day below where they where they peaked some five, well, 7 years ago. We have to remember that even though sanctions are lifted, it will probably take billions of dollars of fresh investments to get this the Venezuelan industry back up and back into gear. But right now the market is looking for scrambling for additional barrels, and obviously the low hanging fruits on that front are Venezuela and Iran, both currently hurt by sanctions. They could increase production over time if they were allowed to.
Yeah, Venezuela, a fascinating case because it's perhaps the last remaining region where you could see tremendous output increases in the right investment, a little bit like the Iraqi potential when you had Iraq under Saddam and all the sanctions there. The production, I can't remember the numbers, but it was quite low, and it grew by a multiple post Gulf War II when investment flowed into the country and it could realize more of its geological potential, huge geological potential in Venezuela, even beyond, I would suspect, that 2.5 million barrels per day that it was pumping out approximately in the years past. So very interesting.
Yeah, they have exactly, John. They have the world's largest reserves. And yeah. It's a very heavy crude, which is quite light these days, where a lot of other producers are producing very light crude. So it's an interesting case.
It'd be great for mixing probably with the other stuff. All right. And now what's the latest on gas? Looks like on your chart on slide 6, we're sliding down to the lower end of the range. But I guess the story is the inventory builds. It's the quite interesting story here.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, we can thank the Chinese for that. I say unfortunately because it's also part of the global economic slowdown we're seeing right now, with the lockdowns in China hurting demand, industrial demand for gas, and that has basically led to lower demand from Asia in general. I think also some of the countries are bulking at buying gas at these very, very high prices, so they're allowing stocks to run down. And that has left more LNG supplies for the European market, and apparently for now, at least for now, we're just paying whatever price to get these stock levels higher to reduce the risk of a winter shortfall. So as you can see in slide 6, the storage levels are recovering very, very strongly. We're probably going to hit the 5-year average within a few weeks if this pace continues. What is interesting, and even in this kind of scenario, gas has not really moved far away from 100 euros. So we're still trading a factor 5-6 above the long-term average, and even for the next winter, which is on the top right, the winter 22-23, the blue line, you can see we're still stuck there around 100 euros as well. So for now, the market is breathing a sigh of a relief, but the troubles are most certainly not over yet. If these prices are anything to go by.
Okay, now I'm not sure about how to do a segue, but let's roll back to slide 4 with the FX market. Pretty interesting yesterday, with risk sentiment quite strong. You have the dollar as a key flip side of that, and so we saw a weaker dollar. But one of the more interesting technical developments was the euro popping back above 105 on some comments from ECB member Claes, if I'm saying that name correctly, or Claes Knot, who said that we should not rule out 50 basis point moves from the ECB. Second day in a row, we've seen some hawkish talk, and I think risks have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting as well. But look at the slide we've seen from, you know, let's call it almost 112 all the way down to the sub 104 lows. There's a lot of wood to chop to reverse this trend. Yes, tactically, it is very interesting. And if this bar is reversed immediately, we can wipe away this latest little squeeze. But the next levels would be something like a squeeze above the 106.35 pivot, or it's actually 106.40 was the nominal high there recently. And that is that big pandemic outbreak low. But above that, I mean, you have to work through all kinds of levels. I would argue through 108 to 108.50 before you can start talking about reversal potential and really even above that. So let's see. I think risk sentiment will quickly become more interesting than ECB talk if we are set for more selling of risk assets. Elsewhere, sterling has been on a crazy ride recently. I mentioned, or I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I mentioned in my FX update yesterday that the employment data yesterday is a little bit embarrassing, because here you have Governor Bailey of the Bank of England fretting and moaning about the risks of a recession, unemployment rising, and we can't do anything about it, us poor BOE members, because of the backdrop, sort of, you know, deflecting responsibility for what's going on, partially fairly, because there is very little they can do, but there it is. And then you get a very, very strong employment report like you saw yesterday. It sort of messes up the narrative. And then as well, I missed this one when it came out, but the some noise circulating in the press and with some decent sources that they're considering tax cuts, and especially a VAT tax cut, and especially some packages aimed at the very lower end of the income spectrum, which would allow the Bank of England to move more aggressively on its rate hikes than has been previously priced in. So we saw a pretty chunky jump in the UK rates at the front end of the curve on that. We're seeing this fading badly. And if you think about how that would play out, it's not positive for this for sterling, because it just means it's going straight into fiscal deficits. Those have to be offset. UK is running profound external deficits anyway. So I'm still very skeptical on this sterling. And we saw the dip in euro sterling yesterday wiped out as well. So, sterling on tilt a little bit with trying to get a bit cheeky to the upside, but it looks like this move is reversing. Let's see where it sticks or where it ends up over the next couple of days. And then I would note Ola on gold. I know you don't have prepared a bunch of thoughts on that, but just this latest weakness there in the FX board, you can see on the right-hand side of slide 4, has to be that hawkish talk from the Fed. The sense, just the general sense that this Fed is just not going to really back down in any meaningful way until it sees this persistent drop in inflation.
No, exactly, and we saw that I think twofold. Obviously, we got rejected at that the 200-day moving average, which we mentioned yesterday, just below 1840. So the market was not at that point strong enough to carry it through. And then those comments late in the day really did the rest of the ensured the rest of the selling. And the reason for that is basically that, again, looking at the U.S. yield curve or the composition of the U.S. yield, break-even yields, they actually held pretty steady because the market is buying the Fed's ability to fight inflation. And with yields going up at the same time, that obviously something had to give, and that was real yields. So real yields moved back above or close to 25 basis points in the plus, and it was testing 10 basis points just the other day. So it seems like there's a bit of a reattachment between gold and real yields at this point. And especially, I'll say, to some disappointing on a day where the dollar, as you mentioned, weakened to the extent it did, that it didn't have more to say in terms of supporting gold. So for now, the bears are still in control, and we need to break above the 200-day moving average for that to change.
Yeah, and on that note, as you mentioned, the dollar may be less prominent when the storyline across the board was big jumps in central bank expectations, Bank of England, ECB, and the Fed itself. Let's go to those Home Depot comments on 5 years of housing strength. I shake my head that any CEO would put out such a comment when, if they just look at a mortgage chart, it's baked in that we're going to have an absolute collapse to at least no growth in U.S. home prices, if not an outright fall in home prices, which I suspect will eventually be the case once we hit a recession inside the next year to 18 months. Let's look at some housing related figures on that note, because we have some of the more leading stuff beginning to roll over quite prominently. So slide 7, I put up the NAHB. This is one of these new housing surveys. I did some research way back in the past. I should probably refresh it, that this is one of the more leading surveys. And you can see that this the data point released yesterday dropped all the way to 69. That's a big 8-point drop. And that was versus expectations for 75 and 77 in the prior month. So a big drop there, a very big momentum shift. And I think it's going to, at least in a moving average sense, continue to follow through in line with the rise in mortgage prices. And this will lead to a softening of the housing market. And you're seeing on the right that pending home sales, so activity drops before prices in the housing market. It's an illiquid asset, so it takes a while for sellers to be willing to mark down the prices. You're seeing that red line, which is the pending home sales, dropping quite aggressively now. And the housing starts and building permits, that data is up today, the latest print, is not rolling over yet meaningfully in any way. But you can see that the pending home sales does lead, at least it did back in 2005, quite clearly, by about 6 months. So the pending home sales dropped. So end of 2005 was really the peak in the housing market. And then the intent to build dropped very aggressively starting in 2006. So it looks like about a 3 to 4 month, I would suspect it might be more compressed in this cycle simply because of the violence of that move higher in U.S. mortgage rates. I feel like I'm talking way too much. So let me turn it over to you, Peter. And it's actually quite interesting, because to see if the lows is the other big DIY and chain in the U.S. Is out with its earnings today. And Target is somewhat slightly higher end Walmart in the U.S. also out today. So a little contrast today with what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and you and I, we looked at the revenue figures for Target. They're actually holding up pretty well for that company. So again, a little bit in sharp contrast. You said to me there are a lot of Americans that would never set their foot in Walmart. I am a little bit perplexed that Walmart is not seeing a bigger pickup from substitution effects on their revenue. Maybe it's just their size that is the problem. But I was surprised to see Target doing so well on the top line. But the key name, of course, today to watch is Tencent. So Tencent being the biggest technology company, basically the digital highway of the Chinese economy. And look at the chart here on slide 8. Very, very ugly to say at the least. But as we talked about these comments from the Vice Premier Li He, long support for platform companies and that very odd to say the least turnaround by JP Morgan Chase and Chinese technology companies could add a little bit more support. I'm still not buying the Chinese equity story yet. I think there's too many themes at play here that is not in favor of China at the moment. I really want to get on the other side of the Party Congress. I've been saying that in client conversations for almost a year now. So that's still our stance. I would also highlight, John, one of the themes that we often talk about in terms of why, I mean, we were never in the transitory inflation camp. So everyone that has been regularly listening to our podcast will know that we flipped around December 2020 after we got the vaccines and a lot of moving parts were shaking up. So around that new year, we were pretty solid in our more structurally higher inflation outlook. And one of the things that we always talk about is this deglobalization, and with the Chinese lockdowns, talking about China will add to this trend. And I just want to put people's attention to an interesting thing. So we have this carbon tax market in here in Europe. And there has been a lot of talk about carbon border taxes, because if you set up this market internally in the EU, very carbon intensive industries will just go abroad and you just import it. And the EU is now revising its carbon border taxes on cement imports, which will increase prices by 50% on imported cement. So you can see sort of the contours here of a more nationalistic, a different approach inside the EU that will give a major benefit to domestic producers here in Europe. And I think we'll see a lot more of this going forward, and it plays into this high inflation and deglobalization trend that we're seeing.
Okay, and let's look at the macro calendar for today. There's not a whole lot there. I think that it's very interesting, though, to watch month to month, maybe not this month, but in the coming 2 to 3 months, the rolling over potential in housing starts and building permits and the gathering evidence of the impact of that. And as well, we have to consider those other even more, much, much, much more housing intensive countries like Canada in particular, where the housing market is multiples in weight relative to the economy compared to the US. And on that note, the Canadian CPI is up today, the Canadian Home Price Index. That's going to be a very lagging indicator there. But rates, of course, in Canada have also accelerated higher and are going to impact the economy. Very, very leveraged private sector in Canada. And watching the status of the dollar CAD after it broke above 130 and then sort of poked back down to the range, but hasn't fully reverted or sort of reversed that move. So, but very sort of tense technical status both there and then in Aussie dollar as well, if you're an FX trader. As Ola mentioned, the weekly U.S. crude stock reports out of the U.S. very important for especially products. These affect consumer sentiment as well, because that's what people actually buy to put in their vehicles, etc. A 20-year T-note auction up today, and Australian employment data up overnight. And I didn't mention it earlier, but there was wage data from Australia last night, and it was actually slightly tepid, slightly below expectations by 0.1%, only a 2.4% year-on-year wage growth. Doesn't really tear the cover off the ball in terms of the speed of wage gains, and I'm surprised the Aussie is actually as stable as it is this morning. To me, that's a very negative data point. But if I look elsewhere, I guess there's a bit of a commodity focus, a China focus, in the overlay there. But interesting data point from Australia. Okay, let's call it a wrap. It looks pivotal to me in terms of risk sentiment, whether we, if we start to bull through the next layers of resist, sort of, sorry. Both through the next layers of resistance in the U.S. market, let's call it the 21-day moving average. There could be risk of a further squeeze here, but our sort of, as we emphasized, our short-term outlook is still quite negative. But we always have to watch the technicals. So we'll do that, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.